On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we attempt to complete the off seasons for all 30 major league teams. What is one need they still have left before they report for spring training? We scour the free agent market, trade market, and decide what they need to do before spring training starts. And then, of course, it's the end of the week, so we give you the good, the bad, the ugly. Joey Votto is back in our lives. Oh, my goodness. Rick Riz is retiring. Yu Darvish is maybe retiring. And a few other interesting nuggets, as always, in the good, the bad, the ugly.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with more snow than JT. I'm Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman. And maybe Darren Baker can pay back the favor and help me shovel out my car.
That would be awesome. I have definitely spent a good amount of time shoveling the driveway recently, and it just keeps on coming, man. I mean, it's like Buffalo Sabres victories. You assume that it will stop, and then, oh, there's another one. There's more snow. There's another W for our beloved Sabres. But we are not going to talk about the Sabres too much on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. We are going to attempt to essentially complete the offseason for the 30 teams remaining. That's how I'm sort of looking at this exercise today. And then, of course, later on, we will give you the good, the bad, and the ugly. But, Jake, we do have now less than 2 weeks before pitchers and catchers report, but there are still a bunch of free agents, some trades we would like to see happen. So we're going to go team by team and just kind of complete those last moves for the hot stove. So anything else before we get to our exercise?
That's the thing, man. It's January 30th. January 30th, the season feels so far away. But when that calendar flips to Feb, it's a whole different bag of worms. College baseball starts up. You know, you got guys showing up to spring training complexes in Lululemon pants and iced coffee. And you know that the season is not just right around the corner, but it is getting ever closer. And so we are going to finish the offseason once and all, right now. That's our opener. We all have needs, even those of us who are doing well. What do you get someone who has everything in the world? Well, let's talk about the Toronto Blue Jays. We'll start with them. We'll go team by team as we move through the divisions. One need for each team before opening day begins. And the Blue Jays are tough because they are doing pretty good. And, you know, maybe their need was a time machine to go offer Kyle Tucker more money. But other than that, this is a pretty complete roster.
It is. And that's the thing. There's obviously not another Kyle Tucker out there. But there's also not really another even like left-handed hitter that really makes sense to plug in here. Could you squint and see a rise? Maybe. But there is something on this roster that we're looking at and we're saying, what's going on here? And that's Jose Berríos. Jose Berríos, who has been essentially until the last postseason a main character in this era of Toronto Blue Jays baseball, for better or for worse. They, of course, gave him a ton of money after trading for him from Minnesota. But he was not around at the end of last year, including notably during the World Series, when, not that we were expecting him to pitch, but normally when your team's in the World Series, even if you're injured, or you like to stick around and hang out and watch the World Series. And Jose Berríos was not around. So there seems to be something going on there in terms of just how he kind of felt like he was handled at the end of last season. Of course, he was dealing with some injuries. He's still on the roster. He's still making a bunch of money. They've added pitchers, obviously, and they bring Bieber back, and they add Cease and Ponce, and it doesn't feel like his rotation spot is a given, but he's still here, and I hope that our need is just to kind of figure out what the plan is for Berríos, because it seems like it kind of ended at an awkward place last year.
Making 18.7 this year, 24.7 the next 2 years. So the Jays have every incentive possible to give Berríos a runway to get back to being valuable. Three more years.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay. So that's a tough contract for sure in his current state, but He was usable not that long ago, but is he good enough to pitch for the 2026 Blue Jays? I guess we're going to find out. It is something we are watching. Speaking of we need a resolution, let's go to the New York Yankees outfield, where they have successfully returned.
Reunited.
The group that was the best. Reunited, sure, after a few months apart. The best outfield in baseball in 2025. By most measures. Of course, Aaron Judge is a huge part of that. But Cody Bellinger was awesome, and Trent Grisham was awesome. How awesome will they be moving forward? We know Aaron Judge will be. Who's to say? But because Trent Grisham accepted the qualifying offer, and Cody Bellinger, after a long staring contest, decided, yes, I do want to be a Yankee, this outfield is intact, which is good news for the Yankees' 2026 World Series odds. However, they still have this player on their team named Jason Dominguez, and it is very unclear what the plan for him is moving forward. So, What are we doing? Are we just going to pretend like he isn't there? Are we going to trade him for something else? Are we going to DH him? Are we going to, I don't know, make him play catcher?
Are we going to teach him a new position?
Yeah, like how does Jason Dominguez, what is the path forward for his relevance? This is a different conversation than Spencer Jones, right? They get lumped together. Spencer Jones has yet to debut. He's striking out a million times in AAA. Jason Dominguez, at the very least, has proven to be a useful left-handed hitter in the major leagues. I can give him that. That is a thing that he has already pretty much demonstrated. However, there is no room for that on this team right now. So what's the plan here?
Well, and the problem is that Jason Dominguez, right, uber prospect, as hyped of an international signee as we have had in the last 20 years, has kind of stalled out in part due to years missed with injuries and because he just hasn't gotten an everyday runway. You know, the Yankees, they gave him about like a month of everyday playing time at the end of the 2024 season once he got back and they didn't trust him in the corner. His lack of defensive comfort in a corner outfield spot is really why he hasn't gotten enough run. But it's like he's not just going to magically get better. You know, like they have to either provide – there are basically three ways this can go, in my opinion. And I'm curious for your thoughts on this. Either Jason Dominguez will languish on the Yankees bench and will kind of – eventually find his way to another team in 3 years and it'll be, remember what he used to be? He will get playing time with the Yankees because of injury, or they will trade him now. I just can't see a scenario, like he needs to play to get better.
Yeah.
And I don't know how that's going to happen here without a significant injury.
Yep. And that is not something anything is rooting for. We've already discussed our disagreements regarding how likely it is that Giancarlo Stanton remains healthy all the time. If he was to get hurt, yes, the DH would open up some at-bats for Dominguez to be the most likely candidate to receive those at-bats, but that is not something the Yankees are necessarily rooting for. So some sort of Dominguez resolution would be nice to see. If he does get traded, it will be very interesting to see how we talk about him, whether people are rooting for him to make the Yankees look silly, whether he's just a very interesting player to monitor here moving forward. And maybe they're saying we can keep him on the bench, and then when Grisham leaves a year from now, he'll just have a spot then. But I don't think at this point he needs to be playing sooner than that, in our opinion. All right, another crowded outfield. Let's go to the Boston Red Sox and their situation, which is also in an offseason that feels incomplete. And we are just going to go ahead and trade Jarren Duran as the move to complete the offseason. You can debate who should be traded to accomplish this, what they should trade him for. The answer seems to be an infielder that is better than what they currently have. Easier said than done. But the way that the Red Sox have been talking, particularly Alex Cora, about Willy Abreu and how much they believe in Willy Abreu, and the consistency that they've talked about Willy Abreu as, like, we want him to start facing lefties. We want him to be the everyday right fielder. We know Roman Anthony is there. We know Seidan Rafaela has been extended and is a terrific defensive center fielder, and they'd rather him be in center than at second. That all just points to someone's got to go. Someone's got to go, and this is even before you talk about Yoshida. And I think Duran is the one who's not under contract super long term, and who I just think it's time to move on and restructure your roster. So easier said than done, but I just feel like the Duran trade is the one that makes the most sense.
I was talking to a scout yesterday about the Red Sox, a scout that does not work for the Red Sox, to be clear. And I was like, what do you think Boston does with their outfield DH mix? And the scout was like, I think they're going to stick with it. Like, the person didn't think they were going to make a big move from this group. And I asked why. And they said, they just did this. They did this last year, right? They had this group last year and injuries crept up and, you know, rectified the situation sufficiently. Whether that's an injury to Yoshida or an injury to any of the outfielders, like, there is a path here where there are enough at-bats, right? There. And if you add someone to play second base or third base, you're probably taking at-bats away from either Marcelo Meyer or Christian Campbell. Remember him? Remember Christian Campbell, how hyped we were a year ago?
Yeah.
Like, are we just done with him? They gave him 8 years, $60 million. Like, so I think that, yes, if I was running the Red Sox, I would trade one of the outfielders so that I didn't have to play them at DH every day. But I don't necessarily think it's as much of a given, right? Like, I think they can enter the year with this group. I don't think it's optimal, but I also don't think it's an embarrassment as long as they're playing Rafaela in center every day. And remember, it's also not a given that Rafaela, as good of a defender that he is going to hit enough, right? Like, I know he was fine this past season, but you could totally see a world where he's, like, not competent offensively and you have to put Duran back in center and then play the other two guys in the corners.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's just Rafaela having been extended too. I know he's not making a lot of money until like 2029, but that's another person that you said, like, you are here, you are a part of this. Whereas yeah. Duran, I guess, has, you know, he's also still under contract for 3 more years. It's not like he's about to hit free agency. I don't know. It's a weird roster and they still feel a bad short. They don't necessarily have to do that by trading Duran, but that is just how I see it. Let's go to the Orioles of Baltimore, where we all are waiting. You're going to sign Framber Valdez or not? But we'll save Framber for later on. What is the move that completes what is arguably been the best offseason in baseball? Like, you can already make that case right now.
Yeah.
Who got better? Who got the most better? Great English there.
Great.
I think you could say it's the Orioles.
I think that's fair.
Can they finish it off, though? Is there another move that is or isn't Framber that you see?
The bullpen is the weak point for this team. They added Ryan Helsley to be the closer, and they brought back Andrew Kittredge. But beyond that, I mean, it's a bunch of names that people don't know. You know, with all due respect to Dietrich Enns and Cade Stroud and Rico Garcia, and maybe some of these relievers turn into competent pieces, it's just there isn't exactly, like, there's not a lot of veteran dependable arms here in the bullpen. And so they should go out and do something kind of boring in addition to Framber, but go get, like, you know, Tommy Canley or Andrew Chafin or Michael Kopech. Like, just get someone, a reliever for like $4 million who has, like, been around and whatever. Like, it's not the most exciting thing in the world. But when you look at this team as it's currently constructed, the bullpen is the biggest question mark for me.
Yeah, I also think that Framber, moving Framber aside, the other thing with Baltimore is we were also talking about them as, okay, could you make another trade for a Mackenzie Gore, for a Freddie Peralta, for now a lot of those guys are not available anymore, right? They've either already been traded or they're probably not available if it's a Joe Ryan, if it's, you know, I don't know, Brady Singer, is that worthwhile for 1 year? So I agree with you. The guy that continues to confound me with Baltimore from a bullpen perspective is Yennier Cano. I mean, this dude was unbelievable 2 years ago, you know, with Felix Bautista. Bautista, obviously, injuries have completely derailed him. But Cano has been pitching and just has gotten worse and worse and worse. And I, for how good he was a couple of years ago, I still kind of wonder if there's something there that they could kind of get him back to being that seventh, eighth inning guy. But I hear you. I think Kopech, someone with a little bit more upside for the back end instead of just kind of filling in some innings, I think would be ideal. All right, let's finish off the AL East with the Rays. What a weird team. They have also been busy. Have they gotten better?
No.
No?
They have not gotten
they've
better.
They've mostly subtracted. They've added a lot of interesting prospects. Cedric Mullins, Jake Fraley, Gavin Lux. So you've got three new players in your lineup, for better or for worse. The rotation, Steven Matz, I guess, is going to be back to starting. Forgot about that. It's been weird for them. The thing, we've been talking about this for years, their catching situation remains desolate and dire. And whether that's the reason they have now fallen out of annual contention, I don't think that's a bit of a stretch, but it's wild that they just haven't been able to figure this out. And now they're rolling in with Nick Fortes and Hunter Fiducia, and it's like, all right, man, whatever you say, that's the plan in the AL East, where now this is the other reality for the Rays. We can talk about the specifics. We'll talk about this when we get to season previews. Is now the AL East, everyone else is loading up again, and you're really looking like the outlier, and that's where it's starting to look really daunting.
That's the thing, right? Is if you're the Rays this offseason and you look up these four behemoths in the division and you're like, these are all like World Series contenders potentially. It's like, are we winning the World Series with our current core? Maybe if Carson Williams really hits and Junior Caminero takes another step forward, but it's hard to see that. And so where they're at right now, this half step back with the new ownership group in flux, waiting for the new stadium, you kind of understand it a little bit. But specifically with the catcher spot, that is something I think it would behoove them to get some stability, even though they're not going to win the World Series and probably make the playoffs this year. They have had 9 different people start at catcher over the last 2 seasons, which is just a ton. Rortvedt, Jansen, Alex Jackson, Hunter Fiducia, Nick Fortes, Matt Theis, Rene Pinto, Logan Driscoll, and Rob Brantley. Not a lot of all-stars in that mix. And so if you're Tampa, it's just like, just get someone that is an adult and you trust. And maybe that is Hunter Fiducia. I know they went and like got him at the deadline last year. I'm just so uninspired by their catching mix at the current point in time.
That is fair. Let's go to the American League Central, where the Cleveland Guardians, defending champs. I was at Progressive Field yesterday watching Jose Ramirez in his Louis Vuitton sweater and beanie in 4-degree weather commits to Cleveland once again. What a day for the organization. However,
Jose Ramirez freezing his guts off, being like, you know what? I like it here. This is, what do you say, 50% Dominican, 50% Cleveland?
Yeah. 50% Clevelander. It's a hell of a quote. Jose is a legend. However, the other topic of yesterday's press conference, which came up, and what I wrote about earlier this week, is, so who else is going to hit on this team? And Chris Antonetti once again said, we considered external additions, and we determined that our offense, which was not good enough last year, we need to be better. We believe it can be better with the players we already have here. He even said, we considered signing free agents, and it was not a financial thing, but we were not able to offer them the playing time that they were seeking, and so they went elsewhere. You can put two and two together what players they're referring to there, but they still could use someone, and there are still some hitters that fit this roster out there, and so we're going to give them Miguel Andujar. I think Miguel
Andujar
is someone as we... Andujar, when we're going through the top 50 and preparing the top 50 free agents, this was one I was very convicted in including. We had Rob Refsnyder on there, and Andujar was very similar. I mean, he's crushing lefties. He is maybe even more valuable defensively than Refsnyder, relatively, just because he can kind of move around a little bit. And again, it's from the start of his career in New York, it certainly hasn't gone as many of us expected with that 2018 season. But he's kind of rallied to be a useful hitter, and they just need a right-handed bat so badly, and I can't imagine he's going to cost that much. So I don't know what he's looking for. There are a few other teams that could certainly use a right-handed hitter like him, but I would love to see them get Andujar. That would at least balance out the roster a little bit. But who knows? Maybe he's also looking for more consistent playing time than a mostly platoon role.
The Guardians just need people that I'm like, oh, that guy can kind of hit. Like, they just don't have a lot of those players. Andujar, Jordan, nope. Do you remember 2018? He finished runner-up in AL Rookie of the Year behind Ohtani, and Yankees fans were incensed.
Were they? That I don't actually remember as it being.
Yes. Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, it was like a whole thing.
Now, I will
and
say.
Andujar, I mean, this is amazing to look at now. He got 5 of the 30 first place votes, okay?
Oh,
like, he was awesome.
No, I will say, it's an amazing season. Like, 47 doubles and 27 homers. I mean,
this is,
it was one of the great, you can do enough stat heading to consider this one of the great offensive rookie seasons of the 21st century.
Yeah.
And what did he do the next year? I know he got hurt.
Fell off a cliff.
But still.
Fell off a cliff. Just like Ohtani. They both got hurt the next
season. 5 first place votes.
Over Ohtani.
That is absolutely wild. I knew he finished second to Ohtani. That I could have told you. I would have. That is. I'm excited to go back and look at who voted for Andujar. But let's keep it moving and go to the Tigers of Detroit, who have also been very quiet this offseason.
What do they need, Jordan?
They need
clarity.
They need clarity.
Clarity, baby.
They need clarity.
Clarity. Ryan Clarity.
I mean, is saying, well, what are they going to do? They don't know how much they're paying Skubal. It's a convenient excuse.
Let's talk about that quickly. So without the risk of explaining arbitration right now, this current setup is that the Tigers are going to an arbitration hearing with Tarek Skubal, best pitcher on the planet. When they go to arbitration, that'll happen at some point in like the next couple of weeks. Skubal will either get paid $19 million or $32 million. The team filed at 19, Skubal filed at 32. There is no splitting the difference. And so a trio of independent arbitrators will determine what that number is. And so what I have kind of been told is that the Tigers are effectively waiting to see whether they have an extra $13 million to spend if they win the Skubal hearing. Now, what is silly about that is that they should be spending either way, because chances are they're only going to have Tarek Skubal for one more season. There's a lot that is going well in this organization. They have the second best prospect in baseball in Kevin McGonigal, another top 10 guy in Max Clark. Riley Green is a really talented young player who's been an all-star. But like, now is the time. Skubals don't grow on trees. They grow in the desert. And it's a once-in-a-generation type of dude. And it has been incredibly disappointing for them to not capitalize on that. And so it's like, let's say they win the Skubal case. Are they going to like go give out huge money to Framber Valdez or Zach Gallen? It doesn't really feel like it, does it? Because I think they need to upgrade the offensive unit. Yeah. And that's the whole thing. When you say it might be too late, this team needed that clarity earlier in the winter. And so their inability to get to a number with Skubal when they could negotiate a number with Skubal left them out in the cold on a number of offensive free agents that might have moved the needle for them. Now, look, they don't want to prevent the young guys from having a spot, right? Like, you need to make sure if Kevin McGonigal rakes at the beginning of the season, there's somewhere for him to play in June or July, right? So I get not wanting to block guys. But at the same time, it's hard to look at this lineup and say that lineup can win a World Series.
Yeah, I agree with that. They're also a team where it's like, were you expecting Gleyber Torres to decline the QO? Because that also probably impacted their payroll and off-season strategy in a way that I guess we'll never know, because they'll just be like, we love Gleyber. We're so excited that he's back. Like, well, okay, we'll see. All right, let's go to Kansas City. They have been kind of busy making some trades, at least extending Michael Garcia and Salvador Perez. However, they have spent basically nothing in free agency. I believe it's just Lane Thomas and Alex Lang, I think. And so this is also a lineup where you are looking at the top and saying, ooh, I like this. And then you're looking after that and you're saying, nope, that's bad. So is there a hitter out there or hitters that they can still add before opening day that will make us feel better about that?
If injuries didn't exist, I could make an argument for the Royals as the best team in the American League. If injuries didn't
exist. American League Central. American League. Wow.
There's like a pathway to that. Oh, where it's like, whoa. Michael Garcia, like 5-win player. Bobby Witt, 8-win player. Vinny was awesome in the second half last year. He keeps going. Salvi's like, there's a pathway to that, in my opinion. The problem, like Carter Jensen could be a dude. He's going to DH for them.
Okay.
Cole Reagans comes back and he's healthy. Like, I think this team could be really, really good. The problem is, over 162 games, your depth gets tested because injuries happen. There is attrition. And the second level of Royals players is just not that good, in my opinion. And I think they really need to add to that depth externally by bringing in some sort of depth options in the outfield, whether that's, you know, Austin Hayes, whether that's, you know, go get Andrew McCutchen to DH sometimes. That's probably not a great idea. Mitch Garver is someone who can catch in DH. I just think they just need more competent bench players. Now, I'm not saying if they do that, they're going to be the best team in the American League. But I think that they are a legitimate contender to win this division because no one else in it is even trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, they added Isaac Collins, which is an interesting trade. I mean, my pushback, I agree that Jensen and Cags could maybe, if they take the step, then yes, this offense levels up. But my pushback on what you just said is all those guys just played 162 games and they were not good enough. Yes, Reagan's missing was a big deal on the mound, but they got all of those four best players. You just got exactly what you would hope. And so to me, it's more about, okay, well, when one of those guys doesn't do that, now you're really in trouble. And that is why they need more offense.
All right, let's move on to the Minnesota Twins, who all of a sudden need a new president of baseball operations. We got this news literally right now.
Yeah, this is a very strange time to have a transition of front office power, but the term mutually parted ways is being thrown around between the Twins and Derek Falvey, who has been there for quite some time, and they have obviously had a change in ownership, not in ownership, but in who the point person is, as they just changed Pollad Brothers, as opposed to actually selling the team like fans were hoping. For whatever reason, it seems that right now is the time to move on. Maybe Derek Falvey was not interested in pursuing or moving forward with the current leadership. Maybe the current leadership was not interested in moving forward with him. Jeremy Zoll, who has been their GM, will run baseball ops while their new owner, not new owner, Tom Pollad instead of Joe Pollad, runs the other stuff and looks for, I guess, a new Pobo. But this is extremely strange and only adds to a very strange time in the Minnesota Twins franchise history. This is already a team that, after trading away 10 major leaguers at last year's deadline, we just assumed that this offseason would be a continuation of that. And instead, they have done very little. And now they have moved on from Derek Falvey. I am beyond perplexed, and I look forward to finding out more about the situation. But for now, we'll move on to the rest of the American League Central.
It just seems like they're in the middle here. That's the problem. They're in the middle, right? Like, if they're going to sell, sell. And if you're going to sell, why did you, like, the guy who just sold is no longer in charge. Is it the same vision? Is it a different vision? I understand making a pivot, but the Twins just seem a little bit directionless right now. And so they should find some direction.
Yeah, and we have statements from Tom Pollad and Derek Falvey being like, we've decided to move forward apart. Like, okay. But as with a lot of the things with the Twins over the last year, it just leaves fans kind of stuck and wondering where this franchise is going. So that is frustrating. And yeah, they need clarity just as much as anybody right now.
All right, let's finish off this division before we go to the AL West. Chicago White Sox, we've had a very cute offseason. I just want to pinch their little cheeks, bringing in Munetaka Murakami, taking a swing on that. Anthony Kay, bringing him over from Japan to be in the rotation. And when you look at this roster, you can see them being competent in 2027. There are enough interesting pieces in the lineup now where it's like, okay, there's room here. Luis Angel Acuña is on this team. Kyle Teal and Colson Montgomery take another step forward. But what they really need is like a legitimate starting pitcher, like not an ace necessarily, but someone that you can start on opening day and we won't laugh at you. And I think that that's Zach Gallen. Now, I know that's kind of a weird fit and they would have to give up a draft pick to get him and they would kind of be hesitant to do so. But I think Zach Gallen fits pretty well with the White Sox. He's looking for kind of a different perspective after trailing off last couple of years in Arizona. The White Sox pitching development is very well respected, run by a guy named Brian Bannister. He used to be a big leaguer. People love Bannister. I think this is a very interesting landing spot for Gallen. Do I think it will happen? Absolutely not. I think getting a guy on your team who can really pitch before you get good, like, raises the bar for everybody else and, like, sets a certain standard. And I think Gallen would do that.
Yeah, especially just because they have some famous pitching prospects, but not ones that are particularly trending well in Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz. I'm not totally out on those guys, but I think if you talk to White Sox fans a year ago, even knowing the horrible season they were about to embark on, they would be like, well, this time next year, you know, Schultz and Smith will be in the rotation and we'll be excited about what's happening on the mound. What happened was a lot of good things on offense happened. A lot of positive strides in the lineup, which is exciting. But now there's more questions on the mound. I agree with you. Adding some more certainty there. Or maybe another reunion. Maybe like Chris Bassett? Didn't he used to be on the White Sox? Wasn't he like drafted by the White Sox? Yeah, 16th rounder in 2011. Bring Bassett in. Opening day starter.
Lucas Giolito
home? Some old friends. All right, let's do the AL West quickly before we take a break. Seattle Mariners.
Oh, wait, just quickly on Lucas Giolito. On Giolito. You know, we had Lucas on the show earlier this offseason. He does not yet have a team. And we're texting him about once a week. Do you have a team yet? And the answer is still no. So we can report here on Baseball Barbecast, Lucas Giolito unsigned.
We got that scoop. Let's go to the AL West, Seattle Mariners. It's the move everyone's been screaming about for 3 months. Just trade for Brendan Donovan. Just do it already. I spent some time yesterday trying to figure out what the not Brendan Donovan move is. And I couldn't figure it out. Sure, they could bring back Gino Suarez. That's not a terrible idea if he really is just going to settle for a one-year deal and you're looking for more of a stopgap at third before Cole Emerson is ready. I think that's fine. I think that would be okay. Everyone would love to see Gino again. Like, duh. But Donovan is just the one that fits. He gives you coverage at second and third. He does make your lineup better. It just checks all the boxes of what they're looking for. They haven't been able to line up on a trade yet, but this one's just too obvious. So I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but it just takes one phone call and for them to put the one prospect that the Cardinals are looking for into that deal. And we'll talk about the Cardinals element when we get to the NL in the next segment, but I just think this is still the move that makes the most sense for them.
He also offers them something that the lineup doesn't really have. You know, Mariners offense took a nice step forward last year, but they were still pretty high in terms of like strikeout percentage, right? And contact rate. And Donovan is the opposite, right? Like, it's a lot of contact. He never strikes out. And I think having that type of player in the lineup around big swingers like Julio and Cal is a helpful dynamic to have. Let's go to the Astros. We have talked about this quite a bit. Their roster does not make sense. They have pieces that do not fit together. Christian Walker, under contract to play first base. Carlos Correa, just traded for him to play third base. Yordan Alvarez, injured last year. He needs to be the designated hitter. Where does that leave Isak Paredes, who was an all-star for them a year ago? He plays third. He plays first. Probably can't play anywhere else. They have four dudes for three spots, and I think all four of those guys need to be in the lineup. You can trade Walker. You're going to get less, and you're going to have to eat some money. But you don't want to trade Paredes necessarily because he's at present the better hitter. So they're in this very bizarre situation. So in my mind, the Astros need is to get either Isak Paredes or Christian Walker off the roster so that they just have a more cohesive unit of position players that they can shuffle through and stick with.
Ideally for an outfielder, because this outfield situation is not awesome right now. Let's go to the Texas Rangers, who made their first big move, I guess second, after trading for Brandon Nimmo. Now they trade for Mackenzie Gore, which we talked about recently. What do they need? I think we talked about in Texas, it's like, okay, cool, you added Gore. Your team ERA was the best in the sport last year. You have this pitcher's park. You're probably going to be able to prevent runs. Everything with Texas hinges on the offense bouncing back and staying healthy. And I think that they need to give themselves more opportunities for the offense to be good. So I don't know exactly what player that is. If they're a free agent that makes sense for them. Gino Suarez doesn't make sense for them. Arise doesn't really make sense for them. Although you could maybe argue it. It's just they're already pretty left-handed. I don't know, man. This is such a weird team. But they are definitely a few bats short for me feeling that confident about them.
The Sacramento Nomadic, Yolo County, A's of Las Vegas, Oakland. This lineup is awesome. It could be one of the best lineups in the game this year. This pitching staff is not awesome. It could be one of the worst pitching staffs in the league this year. The A's should sign a pitcher. Now, if you're a pitcher, if you're a free agent pitcher, why would you want to go play there? Why would you want to go to Sacramento? Doesn't exactly seem like Luis Severino's having a great time pitching at that ballpark. However, the A's should just go pay Framber Valdez. Because if they're going to be a good team in the next couple of years, they need someone who can, you know, pick up the baseball and throw it near the catcher.
Maybe Framber loves Las Vegas. Maybe that's their only hope. Find a pitcher that believes in Las Vegas and wants to pitch in Las Vegas. That might be the answer. Because right now,
put him on the renderings.
Sell. But yeah, that's true. Presumably, we'll be getting those soon. Just put Framber in there and be like, oh, hey, look, you're on the team. All right, let's finish up with the Angels of Anaheim. This is also a pitching staff that has some new faces in Grayson Rodriguez, in Alek Manoah. Two pitchers that we know exactly what we're getting from them this year. And that is why I love your suggestion here. Zach Littell. You need something, some guy that you know is going to be able to take the ball. And the Angels pitching staff was stunningly healthy last year, but it was not good. And so now they have added in some serious injury risks in Manoah and Grayson Rodriguez. And we hope they prove us wrong. And by the way, not to mention Kirby Yates, Jordan Romano, Robert Stevenson, Drew Pomeranz in the bullpen. Whole bunch of healthy lads there. They just need guys that you know are going to pitch. And Zach Littell, if anything, has been able to do that. So I think that is a perfect match, Mr. Littell, for the Angels. All right, let's take a break. When we return, the National League.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We told you what everybody in the American League needs. Now we're going to tell you what everyone in the National League needs, and later we're going to tell you what we need. Not really. Philadelphia Phillies. We'll start there. At the NL East. Weird offseason for the Phillies. They've kind of signaled that they're done. What's the business they still have to do?
I mean, we talked about Berríos earlier. There is like a group of players that have been rumored as, well, they're not going to be on the team next year. The leader of, I think, anybody in the entire sport for that is Nick Castellanos. The degree to which the Phillies have just said, you will not be on the team next year, publicly, in every possible way, not just in the moves that they've made, but just in how they've talked about it, has been pretty
kind
amusing.
Of unprecedented.
I'm not going to lie.
In some way.
I'm sure some versions of this have happened, but it is a very, very odd one. And yet he remains. That is not that surprising considering he is not very good and he is owed $20 million this season. However, he's still there. So what's the plan here? Are you just going to unceremoniously DFA him? I mean, here's the thing. He can't report to camp, right? Like that. You can't have him in camp. That feels just disrespectful to him, honestly, to even have him bother to show up. I guess maybe he just wouldn't show up if he's still on the roster. How would you handle that?
If I was Nick Castellanos?
Yeah. Like, let's say you're scheduled to report on February 13th or whatever. You're still on the roster. Are you showing up with how the Phillies have talked about your situation?
You've asked me to do a lot of difficult things over the years, but putting myself in the shoes of Nick Castellanos might be the tallest task I have ever been assigned. Because that is a man whose decision-making is not exactly reasonable and rational. And so I don't know, how would you act if you were Nick Castellanos is just a preposterous question. I would probably go to camp and try and take the high road, but like, right?
Right. I agree with you that, yes, asking you to do it as Nick is a tough assignment.
If you were Nick, what would you do?
Forget the personality involved is very relevant. But even moving that aside, just considering all of the other information about the scenario,
I don't know. I don't know. Like, is it taking the high
I think
road?
If
but
he
what good does it
let me
do
say let me say it this
up?
Way. Let me say it this way. If he doesn't show up to camp, he does not deserve blame for that specific decision. I think he deserves blame for getting suspended by his manager for a game for yelling at him, and deserves blame for being ass on the field last year. Like, he was the worst everyday player in baseball. Like, he deserves criticism for those things. But when your employer is like, oh yeah, the guy that we're going to pay $20 million a year no matter what next year, we don't want to have that guy around, I think it's totally reasonable for Castellanos to be like, oh, you don't want me around? I'm not showing up. Right? Cut me or like let me figure out the next step. Like, Castellanos clearly wants to play in some capacity this season. And the longer the Phillies are like holding on to him, the harder they're making that a reality. Like, it's just going to be more difficult for him to find a landing spot. So if I'm Castellanos, I'm like, just do it already. Like, if you're going to off me, off me.
Yep. I agree. Let's go to the Mets of New York.
Jordan, if you were Nick Castellanos and you were running the Mets, what starter would you trade away?
Let's see. I would probably trade away. I would take a gander. I'm just going to check this right now. That Nick Castellanos' numbers against David Peterson are probably pretty good. Just going to guess that.
Yeah.
And if that's true, I want to trade David Peterson to whatever division I'm going to play in. How about that?
Oh.
So there's so that I can keep facing David Peterson. But let me confirm that hunch, because that is just totally – that could be complete nonsense. He certainly has to have faced David Peterson a good amount, right? Okay. I'm right. 7 for 16. He's hit 438 against David Peterson. So, yeah, that's my answer. I would trade David Peterson. Now, if I was the Mets, if I was David Stearns, is David Peterson the starter I would trade? We are making the point that we still think that the Mets should trade a starter. I don't know. I mean, Senga seems to be the one they would like to get rid of. That guy's trade value, who knows, with his injury history and what he is owed over the next couple of years, which is $14 million apiece plus a club option. So it's not that much. So if you can talk someone into Kodai Senga's medicals, I feel like you probably can get something for him. But that still seems more likely than them dealing again from their position player group. It seems like they're committed to hanging on to Beatty, hanging on to Mauricio, which is still Vientos. Like, you can still say just make a trade with those guys, but I don't know.
But it's less about what you'd get back and more about you have too many cooks in the kitchen right now. So, like, who has to be in the rotation? Two people have to be in the rotation. That's Freddie Peralta, who they just traded for, and that's Nolan McClain. Those guys have to be in the rotation. I would say Clay Holmes is the third, is kind of in a class of himself, where he is a competent starter. Converted from the bullpen, he was totally fine last year. I think he'll be in the rotation. That leaves you three huge question marks in David Peterson, Sean Manaea, and Kodai Senga. We're like, okay, are you going to run a six-man rotation? That probably doesn't make sense. Is one of them just going to get hurt in camp? Probably. That's why they're holding on to all of them. But then you also have Christian Scott coming back from injury, who is going to need some sort of runway, and Jonah Tong, who came up at the end of last year. Sending Sprout out, I guess, clears some of that up at the bottom, but it with Peralta showing up at the top, it just kind of pushes everyone down a level. And like, I like the Mets offseason. I think they've done a really good job. I'm just fascinated to see how they work this out with six players who all in their minds believe they should be in the rotation.
Peterson, free agent after this year. Manaea, $25 million each the next 2 years. Manaea is the one. I know the money is fake for the Mets because it's infinite payroll, infinite money glitch, but that's the one that it's like, it's hard to punt on him yet if he can get
I don't help. Think they will. I don't think they'll punt on him because I think part of his issues last year were related to health. He's a great guy to have around. Like, even when he was going bad, he's one of the better clubhouse guys in the sport. And I think Manaea stays. I think it'll either be Peterson or Senga if they do trade a starter. But again, like, we say, oh, these pieces don't fit into these holes. And then someone's elbow starts barking and then they have the right number of starters. So you understand why teams enter spring training with a surplus.
Yeah, particularly on the mound. I generally stand more by the points about those position player groups that don't make sense, because at-bats are at-bats, playing time is playing time, and injuries are less likely. Let's go to Atlanta, a team that was very busy early on and has since been kind of quiet, although the Ha-Sung Kim slipping on ice and
debacle
being out for
a lot of Ha-Sung Kim danger around here. Okay, there's ice all over here.
Oh yes,
I don't want to pull a Ha-Sung Kim.
You're not going to judge him if you fall on ice and are out for 4 to 5 months.
I pulled my back out shoveling. Can I judge Ha-Sung Kim for falling on the ice? Yes.
You can continue to do your job though. Whereas Ha-Sung Kim making $20 million while he rehabs again is not ideal. What do the Braves need? The Braves are going to be a team. I am so curious the degree to which the collective baseball analysis world decides to go all the way back in on them versus, you know, being maybe overly cautious and being like, no, wait, they just stink now. I think you could have argued
Someone's going to predict Braves Orioles World Series as like the double bounce back.
Yeah.
Be careful.
That's right. But there's also going to be people that are be like, oh no, the Braves, it's just over. Like that window is closed. Like, not that they're going to be as bad as they were last year, but the Phillies and Mets are clearly past them. There's a chance there if, you know, Austin Riley cannot get back to what he was, if Acuña continues to be injured, if they continue to have issues on the mound injury-wise, which would not be surprising whatsoever considering the personnel involved. But there's still a lot of talent here. That said, because of what I just referenced, which is just the health of their top four starters, Chris Sale, Spencer Schwellenbach, Spencer Strider, Reynaldo Lopez, and how many innings they have or haven't thrown over the last few years.
Yeah.
That looks like a group that could use another starter and maybe one with upside and not like a Zach Littell type. I guess you could argue Littell would fit here too, but we're going to just go ahead and give him our pal Lucas Giolito. Let's do it. Let's give him Lucas. That's like a great balance of, you know, the floor of a five starter. And which they could use. And I think the ceiling of, you know, a three. And I think that is the kind of place that could certainly use a pitcher like that. So, and I don't think he would be blocking as much, right? Like Hurston Waldrop is exciting and interesting, but I'm not sure he should be guaranteed a rotation spot in the same way that maybe some of these other guys we've talked about when we're talking about crowded rotation. So I like that fit. I think that they could use, and Gallen also makes sense for them if they really want to spend and punt on a draft pick. But this farm system is not great, and I would imagine they would not want to be punting draft picks right now.
Miami Marlins, weird one. This team should have spent more money and gotten like a real player. I don't think they can anymore. A pitcher doesn't really make sense for them. I mean, they're trading away from a surplus of arms, so their rotation is not an area where they're looking to add, I would imagine. And I don't think any of the bats left on the market are big enough game changers for them. That being said, like, this team should sign Gino Suarez, right? This team should sign Luis Arraez on a one-year deal. Like, this team does not have a single position player over the age of 28. You know?
Which is kind of... And that's Kyle Stowers, who is just establishing himself still.
And Griffin Conine. Like, they could use a veteran bat. An adult to have around.
Yes. I don't think Arraez is happening. But Gino is an interesting one. You know, Connor Norby showed flashes and then dealt with some injuries after coming over from the trade from Baltimore. I don't know if you'd want to displace him. But if Gino's willing to play first, I don't know, man. That's not a bad fit at all. Or NDH. That's exactly the kind of leader, because that's another team that you're going to see people kind of talking themselves into as decent just because of what Jacob Marcy did last season, what Kyle Stowers did last season. Like, there are some interesting pieces, but, you know, Owen Casey. So I agree, though. They just need an adult on the offensive side, and Gino would be great, but Andrew McCutchen would be great. Like, Ozuna, I guess, would fit this, but I don't love that as much. But he would certainly fit in that qualification.
Yeah.
Are there any other old hitters? Reese Hoskins would be a very strange fit.
Let's move to the Washington Nationals, who should sign Rhys Hoskins.
Sure. Same exact
thing. The Nats should sign
Rhys. Another team. It's another team that clearly
even
needs
younger.
An old
even
hitter.
Younger. Dude, if their projected starting lineup on Fangraphs, James Wood, 23, CJ Abrams, 25, Dylan Lyle, 23, Dylan Cruz, 23, Luis Garcia, vet, 25, K-Bear, who is not good, 27, Brady House, 22, Nassim Nunez, 25, Jacob Young, 26. Like, Rhys makes so much sense on this team. We're just, if he hits in the first half, you trade him. He's awesome in the room. I think this one makes a lot of sense.
Yep. But it's the same thing as Miami. Like, they just need an older hitter to shepherd the youngsters along. Let's go to the NL Central, where the Milwaukee Brewers, I don't know if you heard, they won the most games in baseball last year in the regular season. What happened after that? Who's to say?
They won Brewers, 0 games against the Dodgers.
They won 0 games against the Dodgers. Let's pause here and give some love to this incredible fun fact from our pal Sarah Langs, who, inspired by our conversation about Jet Williams on the last podcast, went and did the research. We said, wow, can you imagine if they start Jet Williams at short and Caleb Durbin at third, two guys at 5'7" in a major league infield, left side of a major
on
league
the left
infield.
Side.
Yeah, these ain't no, you know, tiny second baseman here. And she looked it up. And the last time a team started two third base and shortstop this short in the same game was the 1933 Reds. Of course, everyone remembers that team. I love these names. Sparky Adams at short, Andy High at third base.
Hey. Well, I love that in this infield, the second baseman is the tallest guy. Andrew Vaughn is 5'10". And Bryce Terang is 5'11".
Terang. Oh, man. Yeah, Andrew Vaughn is sneaky short. That is a great point. He is sneaky short for a first baseman.
The whole team's sneaky short.
And Terang is not tall. Terang's not tall.
This is what the Brewers need. The Brewers need a step stool. That's their offseason need, because clearly they're not going to spend money on free agents. So just buy a bunch of step stools so everyone can reach things on high shelves. Who's the shortest player left for them to sign? Adam Frazier.
I think it's Adam Frazier.
MJ Melendez is not that tall.
What's Alexi Amarista up to?
Dylan Moore. Oh yeah,
I think Dylan
Luis Arias.
But that's not about. Oh, Luis Arias. Will Brennan is definitely like 5'9" or 5'10". I think Alexi Amarista.
Get some short kings out there.
5'5".
Ramon Arias.
Still in Mexico last year. Ramon Arias. I think both Ariases are available. Alexi Amarista had a 983 OPS in Mexico.
Oh, here's who they should sign.
So there's my pick.
Here's who the Brewers need. Ready? There aren't many little guys left, but there is one Littell guy.
Ooh.
They should just sign Zach Little. Zach Littell. Zach Littell. There you go.
Perfect Murph content. I know he had a good line about the Brewers being short at the BBWAA dinner. We move on for the Brewers. The Cubs of Chicago. They've done some cool stuff. They signed Alex Bregman. What a concept. Just go give the good player a lot of money. They traded for Edward Cabrera. They completely rebuilt their bullpen around Daniel Palencia. And I still feel like they need another pitcher. Yes, you see 5 starters on the projected depth chart. Matthew Boyd, Edward Cabrera, Cade Horton, Shota Imanaga, Jameson Taillon. I think they need another one. Rumors about interested in Zach Gallen don't make as much sense now if you know, someone at the top. This is one, though, it kind of straddles the line we were talking about of, like, which of these guys has to be in the rotation versus have some wiggle room. If Chris Bassitt is willing to be a full-time reliever now, I think he's a great fit because he's awesome insurance in the rotation and also might now be reaching a new gear in the bullpen, which I think they still need. So I kind of like that Bassitt fit. I know Colin Ray is basically, and Javier Assad are basically playing that role. Is there room for another hitter? Maybe, because Chaz McCormick's on their projected team. But I don't know. I don't really see who that hitter is right now. So I'll go Chris Bassitt.
Yeah, and they have Kevin Alcantara they want to give plate appearances to. I think this is the team they have, I think, is the team that they're rolling into spring training with. I don't think they'll make any additions. I do think Chris Bassitt makes a whole lot of sense here. You just start him as a starter just in case someone gets hurt and to tide over until Justin Steele gets back. And then later on in the season, if you end up, you have too many starters, like you can just push him into the bullpen towards the end of the year. And I think he would be willing to do that if you create the correct type of environment. Let's move on to the Cincinnati Reds, my favorite baseball team.
Jake loves the Reds. It's all he talks about when we're not podcasting is just how much he loves the Reds.
How much I love the Reds.
This one, we were struggling to figure it out. The Reds have made some weird moves this offseason.
What do you get someone
they
who's got everything?
They look fairly incomplete. They have this J.J. Bleday, Dane Myers platoon rocking in left field. I think they also still need a hitter. You could say they should trade Brady Singer. Do they have the depth to withstand trading Brady Singer in his final year? I think yes, if Rhett Lauder is healthy. But they just need another hit. It's the same thing as Cleveland, some of these other teams. Some sort of hitter that you feel good about. I mean, just the offense by the end here was just not. If not for Cleveland, we would be talking about how Cincinnati's offense was one of the worst we've seen in the postseason in years. But Cleveland made sure to do their Ohio neighbor a favor and be like, no, don't worry, we'll be worse.
For those of you watching on YouTube, like, this is where the Reds are at, right? We got welcome to Reds country, Brock Burke.
I do like Brock Burke. I do like what they've done with the bullpen.
Sure.
But got to score runs.
It's also their offseason. Dude, their offseason makes me so mad because they were flirting with Schwarber. And by flirting with Schwarber, they were flirting with the fan base where they were like, yeah, you know, we would go above our means for Schwarber because he would bring people into the ballpark. And then they didn't get Schwarber. And now the Reds are just like, well, you know, we're poor. But we weren't poor for him.
Yeah, it's a great what if is like how much would they have traded away if they signed Schwarber, you know, because they would have balanced it out somehow. I don't know how. Brady Singer would not be on the Reds. That I'm quite confident in. All right, let's go to St. Louis. We talked about how the Mariners should trade for Brendan Donovan. Should the Cardinals trade Brendan Donovan, whether it's to the Mariners or somewhere else?
So this is an interesting conversation. It is a little different.
Yes.
I lean yes. It is different, though, than the other three vets that they've traded this winter, right? Arenado, Sonny Gray, and Contreras were all under free agent contracts. They were making a lot more money. They were all on the wrong side of 30, moving deeper into their 30s. Brendan Donovan's still only 29. Because he came up late, he's still another 2 years away from free agency. He's not a free agent until after 2027. So you could hold on to him, even though you're clearly not trying to win right now. He's a really versatile player. He's never really blocking anybody because you can move him around, right? And so I think it would be fine if they don't get the price they're looking for back to keep Brendan Donovan.
My pushback is that I don't think Brendan Donovan is getting any better. And so it's not a situation where it's like, oh, if you hold this pitcher and he has a good 10 starts, better than the 10 starts he finished last year, the kind of the conversation we're having about Gore, we know he ended up getting traded anyway. I feel like we know what Brendan Donovan is, and even more relevant, we got to make some room here for our pal J.J. Weatherholt to play all the time. And maybe that can happen with Brendan Donovan still there, but J.J. Weatherholt should be on the opening day roster. I firmly believe that. Maybe that's at the expense of Nolan Gorman. That's fine. But either way, I just feel like I trust Bloom for sure. So if they're not getting the price that they want, I get it. And I'm not saying you're going to get less for him necessarily at the deadline. But there's just a lot of teams out there that I feel like are interested. And I think they could find a deal here and just make way for it. So I still lean that I think it will happen. But I do see it from both sides. I'm kind of feel like just get it over with and start the youth movement sooner rather than later because they got some interesting young players. I got to say that.
Pittsburgh Pirates, they can pitch, but boy, they really can hit. They've done a couple interesting things this offseason, bringing in Brandon Lau and Ryan O'Hearn to bolster that group. But for all the talk about the Pirates kind of pushing their payroll, they're really not that much higher than they were when the season ended. I mean, their projected payroll right now on Fangraphs is at $95 million. They finished last year at $87 million. And so it's not as if this is some sort of big, commendable spending spree to supplement Paul Skeens and Co. That's not the case. They need to do more. And I think Gino fits pretty well on this team. Their current third baseman is Jared Triolo, who's fine. But for a team that was, what, last in home runs last year?
Last by a lot.
Suarez would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. No, they need power as much as anybody. That is still true even after the Lau and O'Hearn additions, which will help. Jake Mangum probably not going to help in the home run department, but certainly good energy.
117 home runs last year as a team. That is dead last. The Cardinals were second to last at 148.
Yeah. It was bleak. And so they still need more. I think with Gino, it's just, yeah, it's an obvious fit. Does he want to go to a team that is maybe going to win? And the point I made about Okamoto, that is the worst park for right-handed home run hitters by far. Mm. It is not even close. And so if Gino, now Gino's got juice. It's not like he can't get the ball over the fence there. But, you know, if we're still having that as a consideration and also that they're probably not giving him the best offer, that's probably the holdup. But it would be a great move, and we support it. We go to the National League West, and we begin with the Dodgers. What do they do? Well, Andrew Friedman, interestingly, after the – I think it was right after the Tucker signing. He wasn't even at the Tucker signing, which, by the way, like, what a flex. They give a guy $60 million. The Dodgers give a guy $16 million, and it was just Gomes and Dave Roberts. Like, that's not even an ownership move, right? It's like, no. Any other team, some teams, they sign a guy for $10 million, and we got the owner up there, you know, the GM. Dodgers, Friedman's like, oh, what? No, sorry, I got something. Anyway, Andrew Friedman said, we are no longer interested in starting pitching. That is a thing he's on the record saying.
Ever. However,
We also then get reporting that Blake Snell is maybe going to slow play his role into the season. And
but they Blake Snell's like what we did last year. Blake Snell's like last year when I didn't like do anything until August, I would do that again.
Let's do that again. That was great. River Ryan's like, sure, sounds good. I'll be the five starter. I think that what should the Dodgers do? I mean, nothing for the sake of discourse, but
give all their money away. Give it to the firefighters and the teachers.
Yeah, my goodness. If the Tigers lose their arb case to Scooble and you want to piss off the baseball world even more, just go give them all your outfield prospects and trade for Scooble. Why not? Let's do it. Just keep pushing. You're the Dodgers. This is what you do.
That's the thing.
Golden era.
At this point, it's like, just be the villain, you know, just like go all the way.
why slow down?
And not to say that they haven't gone all the way. I'm not like, man, the Dodgers really need to lean into their status, but like play the role.
Right.
Go get school.
I think they are probably basically done, which is fine. I can see them maybe adding another reliever, but we will see. All right, let's go to the Padres. This, of all the teams we've talked about today, this is the team I think I really am watching the closest over the next 2 weeks because AJ Preller has not, let me fact check myself on this. I'm pretty sure AJ Preller has not made a trade this entire winter. If he has, it has been very minor. And that is shocking. That is an unbelievable sentence to say out loud, that the San Diego Padres have almost made it to spring training without making a trade. I think that's accurate. I think they have not made a single trade. That is impossible. I refuse to believe that will remain true until opening day. Maybe it was until spring training. AJ Preller, let him cook. I don't know if that's shedding money. I don't know if that's scrounging from your worst farm system in baseball to trade away more prospects that may or may not exist for major league help. But I refuse to believe he can be held scoreless, tradeless for the entire winter. It is honestly even more preposterous than Jerry Dipoto. And Jerry Dipoto has made a trade, right? They have made a couple.
Collusion? But collusion. The 30 other GMs are preventing, 29 of the GMs, the 20, are preventing.
Yeah, they blocked his number.
They blocked his number.
They're like, yeah.
They blackballed
him. Maybe they did like an intervention. They're like, Preller, work-life balance this winter. Take it easy, buddy.
Mm.
I doubt that.
AJ, but we'll in this see. New year, we're focusing on a new you. You're going to wear pants now, not shorts.
He will not be denied. He will make a trade. I'm confident. Arizona Diamondbacks. Here's a fun one. Let's reunite them with one of their former first basemen. Could be Paul Goldschmidt in free agency. Could be Christian Walker. Bring him home. We just talked about how he doesn't fit on the Astros anymore. This team needs a right-handed hitter, ideally at first base. I think this is great. Could be Goldie. Could be Christian Walker. Could be, let's see, who was their first baseman before Goldschmidt and Christian Walker? Because like that was like a prolonged era, which I'm now thinking about. But either way, Goldschmidt, Christian Walker, let's make it happen. They still need pitching, so I don't want to like discount that as a possibility. But I think just looking at it, I think it'd be kind of great if they bring back one of these guys.
Give up one of the outfielders, like, you know, to the Astros could use a guy to play in an outfield corner, you know?
Yeah.
I don't even know who that is.
Again, you're probably, right. If you can get the Astros, you're not paying Christian Walker that much. That would be awesome. I'm seeing that their first baseman, yeah. Oh, of course, I should have known this. Adam LaRoche. Now, that was for one season in 2010.
This is Connor
Reynolds
Jackson.
The other guy that was, Connor Jackson was not a first baseman, was he? Anyway, okay, enough snakes talk. Let's finish up with the Giants and the Rockies. Who would you like to do first?
Let's do the Giants. Max Scherzer. Okay. Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander, who we have not mentioned, they need to play. Like, they're not done. They're both not that great, but they're going to keep playing this year, and they don't have teams right now. Maybe they'll do, like, the Roger Clemens thing where you just, like, wait until the middle of the year and join a team that's good so you can see who's good before you commit. But we all just assumed that Scherzer was going to go to the Giants because he's friends with their new coach, Tony Vitello, because they were together at Missouri when Scherzer was playing there in college. That has not happened yet. I feel like it should happen. Is Scherzer holding out for more money, or is he holding out because he doesn't think that the Giants are going to be good? Both are funny to me.
Both are possible. I like that you called him their new coach. It would be great if we called Tony Vitello, like we keep calling him like Giants head coach. Everyone else is a
manager. He's the head coach. He's the head coach of the Giants.
All right, Colorado Rockies, just sign a Luis Arraez. Just do it. Let him hit 400. It would be great. Everyone would enjoy it. Rockies are starting to
show up.
Like, they're starting to do stuff. They're starting to like kind of make some trades. We love that. Edward Julian, he's going to hit a really long home run at Coors Field next year. This year, we can say this year now because it's 2026. I think they should sign Luis Arraez. That'd be so much fun.
There's so much space in that outfield for activities.
Yeah.
And no one better to capitalize on that space than Luis Arraez.
So much room for 160 singles. But
he can hit 500, dude. He get like, I love the idea of the Rockies are like 50 games under 500 in September and Luis Arraez is hitting like 389. And SportsCenter is cutting in to Luis Arraez at bats.
Oh, man. That'd be so great. I would love that. Make it happen. Josh Burns, Paul DePodesta. Give the people what they want. All right. We're going to take a break. When we return, we wrap it up. It's the good, the bad, the ugly.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. It's the end of the week. It's the end of the show. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. One thing good, one thing bad, one thing Dan Ugla from the week that was. I will begin. Baseball is going to look a little different this year in terms of how it reaches your eyeballs. All of the new television deals, the broadcast carousel has left NBC Sports as one of the major partners for MLB, first time in a long time. I think they were going to have the Sunday Night Baseball like premier game, taking that away from ESPN. And as part of that, NBC Sports has to build a panel, a desk of talking heads. And that means that NBC has finalized deals with Clayton Kershaw, Anthony Rizzo, and Joey Votto to work on the broadcast, to be part of the MLB coverage. This is from at Mike McCarthy, who writes for Front Office Sports. We could talk about Kershaw and Rizzo. I think Kershaw doing this the same year that he's allowing 9 runs to Great Britain in the WBC pool play is so funny. whatever. Votto's the story and the star here. One of the most charismatic players that we have ever seen, who retired in the middle of 2024 after trying to keep going with the Jays. We did not hear a peep from the man in 2025. He traveled the world. He played chess. Whatever he did, he had a good enough time that he feels comfortable enough coming back to talk about our beloved sport on TV. And I could not be happier to have him back in our world.
100%. This is definitely good. I am also like, do we know whether this is studio versus
no
calling games?
We know that.
I imagine it could be a blend.
We know that Kershaw's just studio.
Got it. Which makes sense for someone who has however many kids he has now. Joey Votto is to our knowledge single and has no family obligations. He's just often traveling the world by himself. So I would love to see him in the booth, obviously, but I would love to see him on the desk. So I agree. This is obviously very good. And a nice transition to my good. As a new era of baseball broadcasting begins, another comes to a close. Mm. Rick Riz, radio voice of the Seattle Mariners, announced that he'll be retiring after the 2026 season, which is not good because I love listening to Rick and talking to Rick whenever I see him in whatever press box across the country. But what a freaking career. Obviously, the Mariners have had some iconic broadcasters in their time, most notably Dave Niehaus, who is such an interesting person and figure as someone who got interested in the Mariners essentially right after he passed away in 2010, but is such an important figure in the franchise's history. But Rick Riz is right there. I mean, he started in 1983 and had a little stint with the Tigers for a few years, but then came back to Seattle, was in the booth, obviously paired with Niehaus for a long time, and he's been the radio voice. I do not listen to games on the radio nearly as much as you do, but this is, of course, one of the exceptions. I basically only listen. I can't think of any other teams that I really go out of my way to listen to on the radio besides the Mariners. And Rick's just always been incredibly kind to me whenever I've run into him. So what a career. I can only speak to a fraction of it, of course, in the degree to which I've experienced it, but what an awesome guy and a hell of a career. So congrats to Rick Riz, and hopefully the Mariners can have a nice little final season for him. That would be pretty cool.
What is bad? My bad is also good. My favorite pitcher on planet Earth, Valente Bellozo has signed with the Colorado Rockies. I said in my bold predictions last year that he would get to 200 innings with the Miami Marlins. That did not happen. Did not happen at all. I love this guy. His stuff is not good, but he pitches with moxie and guts. And why is it bad that he has a job? Because that job's in Colorado. And he's going to give up so many runs, man, in Colorado, and I'm going to have to watch it. I wish he had gone to Texas or something where he, you know, balls would die at the wall. Now they're just going to die in the mountains. Congrats to the whole Bellozo family.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know, man. There's something about this, as Fish on First points out, you know, reunited with Alon Leichman, who was his coach in Miami. That makes me think that, like, for whatever reason, Alon Leichman, who's a smart pitching guy, is like, you know what? I can do something with Valente. And
I'm a Bellozo
Bozo. Only so many pitchers are going to take jobs in Colorado. And he wants to stick around.
That's true.
This is his opportunity, but you're right. It could end up being pretty bad.
If he gets to 100 innings, I'm going to make a t-shirt that says Bozo for Bellozo. All right.
100 innings. Oh my God. You're going to have to, if he gets to 50 something, I think
cut it in half,
to be honest.
I cut it in half, dude. Last year I said 200 innings.
Yeah.
What did he get to? He got to like
85, I think.
That's not 200.
You get to 100 innings.
My bad is Yu Darvish announcing he's retiring or not really? Essentially, Yu Darvish, who had elbow surgery, I believe, last year at age 39, he will turn 40 in August, communicated in some form that he is considering walking away from the remaining 4 years on his 3 years on his contract, and instead just packing it in because he's turning 40 and he's rehabbing arm surgery. But then it was like, nope, just no, he's not retiring, because walking away from $30+ million is not usually something that the Players Association and certainly his agent Joel Wolf is super fond of, I would say. Whether or not this was a miscommunication or whether or not this was intended and Yu Darvish is wanting to retire, whatever happened here, I'm going to say is bad. Yu Darvish, the career, the person, the character, the figure in Japanese baseball history, if he does ultimately decide to retire and we do get more resolution on that, we will throw it in good and we will celebrate Yu Darvish because he is one of my favorite pitchers that I have ever watched. And is also a main character in one of our favorite stories in the history of us doing this as a job, which we will share in the future. However, Yu Darvish, this situation, I'm going to put into bad because it's just awkward at the very least. What do you have?
What's Ugla? What's Ugla? Did you watch Alex Honnold climb the skyscraper?
Absolutely not. I know what you're talking about. No, I did not tune into that.
I did not either. Actually, no, I did. I checked in for like a couple minutes and then I tuned out. I couldn't watch it. It was not for me. I like Alex Honnold. I think he's a fascinating character. The reason I'm bringing him up on this program is because in an interview with the New York Times, one Mr. Alex Honnold, for those of you who don't know, he is the premier climber in the world. The movie Free Solo is about him. He climbs enormous rock structures without a rope, which is bananas. And last week he climbed a skyscraper in Taiwan. Okay. In an interview with the New York Times, he was asked, how much are you getting paid? He replied, I'm not going to say, it's an embarrassing amount. Actually, if you put it in the context of mainstream sports, it's an embarrassingly small amount. You know, Major League Baseball players get like $170 million contracts, like someone you haven't even heard of and that no one cares about. Jordan Schusterman. Do you know who has a $170 million contract on the nose? Just one player in the entire sport. And do you know who that is?
Tell me.
It's Garrett Crochet, ace of the Boston Red Sox, is the only player whose contract is exactly $170 million. This was pointed out by Connor Dorney on Twitter at Just Baseball Media. And so for Alex Honnold to pull the number 170 out of thin air doesn't feel like a coincidence to me. Like, he has to have... There's only one player who makes 170. He didn't say 175. He didn't say 172. He didn't say 150. He didn't say 200. Maybe he just picked 170 to say 170. But the odds feel too high for me. Like, he came across Garrett Crochet making 170. He was like, who is this clown? Who's this joker? You know, he's not climbing anything.
So much ugly here.
Now, look, Alex Honnold should be paid more money than... Whatever. It's so ugly. Dude. Him taking a shot at MLB is so fun.
And that in and of itself, regardless of the tie to Garrett Crochet, which I am way more skeptical of, but I'm highly amused by, is very funny. He could have criticized a lot of other sports, but he was like, these baseball players, no one's ever heard of them. They're making so much money. All right. So that is funny. It'd be so random.
The problem, Alex Honnold, there aren't 45,000 seats in front of El Cap in Yosemite for people to buy popcorn.
Maybe
that's why
be.
You're making less money.
All right. My ugly this week, I don't know, man. Is
as someone who As someone who has been to Yosemite, I will say I'm anti amphitheater in front of El Capitan. Mm. That's my take.
That is a good take. My logo this week is a little bit of draft history. I'm writing about Framber Valdez, thinking about the qualifying offer. And the qualifying offer is just a fascinating thing because it is tied to draft pick compensation. You offer, since 2012, if you offer a free agent the qualifying offer, which of course is an amount that goes up every year, a one-year deal, if the free agent leaves, you get a draft pick. And so there is a very interesting history of those draft picks and what they turn into. Because when we talk about it, it's like, well, they don't want to give up a draft pick. Some people be like, who cares? Draft picks are nothing. Baseball draft is random. And then other people point out, well, hey, when Xander Bogaerts left, the Red Sox drafted Christian Campbell with that pick. When Zach Greinke left the Dodgers, they drafted Will Smith. Okay, that's kind of important. Do you know the greatest comp pick ever? Are you familiar with this history, Jake Mintz? Because that is what I'm throwing your direction right now.
I am not.
It's Aaron Judge.
Is it?
It's Aaron Judge. It's Aaron Judge. And do you know, this is, it's such a sick, twisted reality that Aaron Judge was a Yankees comp pick for Nick Swisher signing with Cleveland. Think about how messed up that is, right? A free agent leaves the Yankees and signs with the Guardians, and we have to be like, oh, Yankees, I'm so sorry that the Guardians took your player. Here's a draft pick. Draft the greatest right-handed hitter of all time. That is freaking ugly if I've ever seen it. This is not, I mean, it's, listen, it's fairly common knowledge. People That's know great. That. But I was, there's just a lot of like versions of this that are very interesting. And I also found that there's four teams that have never forfeited a pick. The A's, Rays, Reds, and Pirates have never signed a player with a QO. So if you're wondering like, oh, no. are the Reds going to sign Zach Allen? No, because this is not going to happen. And also some teams have never even gotten a comp pick. A's, Marlins, obviously, because they never signed anybody. They haven't gotten one. And then also the Phillies. They will be getting their first ever comp pick for Ranger Suarez. So congratulations to them. As previously,
wow, congratulations.
Their QOs for Real Muto, Schwarber, and Nola all resulted in re-signings. And Jeremy Hellickson accepted the QO back in the day. So anyway, there's a little draft history for you. And I just thought the Aaron Judge, Nick Swisher, Cleveland combo was too funny to ignore.
I have a bonus ugla that just came across my timeline. Five Dodgers showed up at a senior prom at the Glendale Rec Center.
Planned.
Yesterday.
You make that sound like they like ambushed the seniors.
Planned. Planned. Okay. Now, yeah, Dalton Rushing, Will Klein, River Ryan, Kyle Hurt, Jack Dreyer. Hilarious.
What a squad.
Like, quintet to be like, the Dodgers are here. There's a mascot.
What?
In this video.
What?
That I don't think I have ever seen
what?
In my life.
What?
I'm sending it to you right now. But there is very clearly a Dodgers mascot in this video that I have
That's
never
not
seen.
A thing. Is it? Are we stupid? Have we ever seen this Dodgers?
I have never seen person? It before.
It's not even a, I mean, can you even call it a mascot? It's literally just like a big dude with a Dodgers hat and Dodgers head.
It's like a mascot of a person.
This is bizarre. I am so confused. I would love to know more.
Yeah.
Should ask around. This is going to be my first question in spring training when I get there. Like, who the heck is it?
Who dis?
I also just love, like, of this five, all the seniors are like, oh my God, it's Will Klein. Oh, Will Klein. Will Klein, man, he's a freaking legend.
I'm just loving the idea of like our senior prom. Like a bunch of like Nats showing up and like half of our class is like, okay. Whatever. Okay, this great.
But to be clear, seniors.
Oh. Roger Bernardine is here.
Seniors. This is not high school seniors. It's a little different.
Wait, what do you mean?
Oh.
It said senior prom. Yeah. It's senior prom.
Seniors. I'm pretty sure. Uh-oh. I'm like 98% sure that that's what this is.
No, it's, yeah, I'm looking at it. These are seniors. They're not seniors.
Well, that's fair. I feel like maybe you could come up with a different
thing. All right, let's wrap it up.
Congratulations to Leonis Telescohedo on their back-to-back Lee Dome Championship. We're so happy for them. Shouts out to Socrates Burrito. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Rosas for producing. You can email us baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Next week, two exciting things are happening. We are going to see the Buffalo Sabres, and at the same time, they will be announcing the WBC rosters. We will talk about those rosters a week from now. But until then, thank you all for listening. Have a good weekend. Talk to you soon.